Fantastic Fest, recording session number 3.
Oh, God.
The subjects, Richard Whittaker. Journalist, award winner.
Oh, God.
Drunk.
I prefer the term high-functioning alcoholic, thank you very much.
Chris Cox, the same except for the first two things.
And the high-functioning.
And the high-functioning. We've got just a few more movies to add on this one here, but I think all three of which, we probably have pretty positive things to say.
I think we do. I think one of them I think we have, I at least definitely have just nothing but rave about, honestly.
Okay, well let's start with Demon.
Oh, Poland, you're so cheerful.
This is not the happiest film ever made. I have a feeling the original Polish title is not, in fact, Demon, which is a pretty generic name for this.
The original Polish title is, in fact... Well, the original Polish title of the film is Demon, but the original title of the play upon which it's based is Clinging, because...
Is what?
Clinging.
Clinging?
Yes.
Okay. Cling, I cling, Dybbuk's cling.
Yes, it's based on the idea that Dybbuk's, which is the Jewish demon or ghost, it's very nebulous of what it is.
It's very unclear.
That they cling to you. That yes. It's not a possession per se. They cling to you. They're just clinging.
They're needy.
Yes.
Yes. So all of my ex-girlfriends have become Dybbuk's. Or already were. I'm not sure.
The basic idea is that this. A Jewish guy from London moves to Poland to get married to his Polish girlfriend, and she wants to move back to the small community where she was born, back into the house that her family grew up in. And he's trying really hard to fit in. He's learned Polish. His father-in-law's like, you kids should get to know each other more. You shouldn't be getting married so fast. But everything seems to be going well. Until he starts digging the hole for the swimming pool at the house.
And uncovers a set of human bones, which he decides, I'm just going to cover these back up.
Yes.
At least for the wedding. But problems start rather quickly for him as he's having visions and strange physical ailments. And this being on his actual wedding day here at this largely empty old family manor home, and with the attached slightly newer and in better shape barn where the majority of the ceremony is taking place, this is not the best day to be going through demonic physical ailments.
No.
And as the wedding, which is like one of those weddings you're either one of those people who would totally love to be at a wedding like this where everything goes horribly wrong, or would be like, this is the worst nightmare ever.
Yeah, it's an extremely middle European kind of event, because everybody is getting hammered, and as things get weirder and worse, they hand out more and more alcohol. Are you beaming in?
Sorry, I just beamed in. I'm here.
They're handing it, more and more alcohol is being plied, and everybody's like, well, just because they're drunk. Maybe he's epileptic. But what you have is, developing in the middle of this, is this very rich but enigmatic ghost story. As he starts acting stranger and stranger, and it is a stellar performance by the lead actor.
Yeah, who really has to... play two different characters, really, in this film.
Yeah. I mean, he's wonderful in this. The performance is... It's almost balletic in places. The actor's name is Itai Taran. He's a good chunk of why this film works. Yeah,
and I think it works more than it doesn't, although I do think at points it doesn't.
Yeah.
I thought that ultimately in the third act, it gets a little confused about what it actually wants to be and where it wants to go. I was left at the end going... You're kind of trying to get away with both being, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Uncertain with your ending and not being uncertain at the same time. And I'm like, well, you can't say it's a dream and then decisively say it's not a dream, too.
The ambiguity for me is not in what happens. It's in how the family responds, because a lot of this is about an old family secret. Well, they're not going to suddenly, and they never explicitly say anything.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that was really beautiful about this. The script is very delicate in this way, but it's very Polish. The humor is extremely dark.
Yeah.
And it is funny in places. It's undoubtedly hilarious in places as the family gets drunker and drunker.
Oh, yeah.
The soundtrack is beautiful.
Considering how dark parts of this are, it's unquestionably very funny at other parts. And there's, like, scenes where relevant drama is happening in the forefront, and in the background is that nightmare shit that happens at weddings going on, where there's something funny happening behind the stuff that's serious. And you're like, okay, that's an interesting mix of themes going on here.
Yeah, I mean, the release of this is going to be... I'm sure this will get an international release, because this is, you know, this is one of the best Middle European films I've seen in a while. It's overshadowed by the fact that the director actually committed suicide recently.
Yeah.
Which is really tragic.
Found himself in a hotel room.
Had an amazing response in Toronto. It had a really great response here. You know, it's the shadow that hangs over this film. It's hard to watch it without that, because it is a ghost story at the end of the day, and it makes that kind of tragic. But yeah, this is a wonderful little film. I had a lot of time for it. And my patience, I think, for kind of the Polish sense of humour is greater than a lot of people. So I think those bits really worked for me. But yeah, I really love this little song.
I guess it wasn't the humour. Like I said, it wasn't the humour that bothered me. I liked the humour. I just thought there was a point, maybe it dragged on a little bit too long. Maybe it was a little too ambiguous. I was left feeling like, yeah, you didn't really finish the story in a satisfying way for me. And at the end was like, okay, that felt like a great beginning of a movie.
No, I actually, I'd say I liked the resolution.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things that it was bold.
Mm.
And I think that was one of the moments where you could really tell this came from a play, because that very much more felt like a theatrical ending.
Yeah.
Where you don't have to have that kind of feeling of complete resolution, that there is that there are ghosts hanging around the end of this play.
Yeah.
And I think that works. For me, that's one of the things I'm going to want from a festival like this, is something that's going to be a little bit off the beaten track in its narrative form.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's much more good than it's not.
Yeah.
I
think there's more good than you think. So we're both on the sliding scale of, yeah, basically.
Yeah, I am kind of on that. I'm giving it some wiggle room around it, you know, being one of a whole series of films I've been watching.
Yes.
Well, next up is High Rise, which has made it to my list of one of the best films of the fest.
I was like, this is one of the best films of the year.
This is Ben Wheatley, who is, if you're a genre film fan at all lately, he is kind of a hero. Sightseers, Kill List,
Filmed in England.
What is the really... Down Terrace.
Down
is the
Terrace
one
debut. Also, the first two episodes of the Peter Capaldi run of Doctor Who.
Right. And this is, like most of his films, drastically different from all the others, and is a equally momentously difficult task and just, you know, balls of steel to even take it on as when David Cronenberg took on Naked Lunch.
Yes.
Because he's adapting a J.G. Ballard novel, one of those everybody wants to make it, nobody has the guts to try to make it.
And what's really fascinating about this film is that every other movie Wheatley has made has basically been him going, well, let's get a cast I like and an environment I like and put it in there. So like the first, you know, Down Terrace, it's just a house. It's a house that he had access to because he didn't have any resources. You know, a field in England. He found a field he liked. Sightseers is actually all set in real locations in the north of England, including the Petrol Museum as a real place.
Oh,
but this is the first time he has been able to completely build a world.
Yeah, and it very much is that. And there's certainly people who are comparing this to Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Because they're both sort of about, like, metaphor for the stratum of society and, like, the differential between the rich and the poor and what have you. And I'd say that, like, okay, that's fair enough, but, like, Snowpiercer is a movie with a heavy metaphor wrapped around it. This is a heavy metaphor with a movie wrapped around it.
But...
And you have to watch it that way.
Yes.
To appreciate it. Because if you try and watch it the other way, you're just going to be... you know, a little disgruntled, a little confused. You have to watch it in this fashion and then see for that how incredibly well done it is.
This is a political allegory.
Yeah.
And
maybe very specific to England as well.
Yeah, Ballard wrote this in 75, but it basically predicts Thatcherism.
Yeah.
The idea is that Tom Hiddleston is a doctor in mid-70s Britain who moves into this new experimental tower block. He's right in the middle. And there was very definitely the further up you are... The richer you are. But things... They don't start to go wrong. They're already clearly wrong.
Yeah.
So the people at the bottom are occasionally told, okay, you don't have power today because we need it for
what's going on upstairs.
And Hiddleston basically plays the top of the bottom and the bottom of the top. He is a guy who is absolutely the fulcrum around which as things start to fall into barbarism in this very subtle, gentle way, and you suddenly realize, like, when did this become acceptable? Why are there raiding parties? You know, why is the upper levels suddenly going, we're going to go and take all the food and the women from down below? People are eating dogs, but it happens so slowly.
Yeah,
that you just go, that's weirdly plausible. But particularly with the British thing, it's not that this could happen. It's this could happen, and everybody would go, I don't want to complain.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Everyone's so goddamn polite until it's too late to be polite.
Yeah.
And then it's just barbarism.
I mean, I think this is a masterpiece. I really do.
It is pretty incredible, and it is, to be said, not for everyone's taste.
Yeah.
I know people who will hate this movie.
Yeah, but they're wrong.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, this is a very distinct type of film.
Yeah.
And some people are like, no, I don't want something I don't want to have to think too hard about. And that's fine. This is one you are expected to use your brain.
Oh, yeah.
You have to appreciate it. And, you know, Jeremy Irons is in this playing, you know, the guy who lives in the very top of the building, who his name is literally Royal.
Yes. Which is not the subtlest of political metaphors. But the nice thing is that his character is kind of like, well, why isn't this experiment working? Isn't it? Aren't we all supposed to get along in here? It's like, how naive you are, sir. Naive you are.
That's one of the things I really liked about this, is because rather than try to deeply bury their metaphors, they're not buried at all.
No.
It's just that every character in this is a metaphor for something.
Yeah.
Everybody stands for something, and kind of the joy of this is, as you're piecing it together, what is happening, what that actually means, what's actually being said about that, and as much as that might be sound exhausting, it's not.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's engrossing, and Wheatley has this, in the same way as Cronenberg, there's a humor that undercuts everything.
Yeah, it's a kind of, in this specific movie, you can't help but compare it to some degree to Brazil.
Yes.
I mean, not overtly, but nonetheless, they both have that sort of absurd apocalypse feel to them.
I mean, this is a very British film, but it's the best of those searing political commentaries that I think we do better than pretty much anybody else.
Well,
this tone of, like, you don't have to like anybody in this film.
For the record, Terry Gilliam is American, but still, y'all adopted him. So.
Tideland, you can have him back.
We don't want him now.
But yeah, I think it's just a perfect example of a form of cinema that Britain has let get away from it. Kind of in the post-Guy Ritchie era, we try to find out what it is we still do well.
Mm.
And I think suddenly, Ben Wheatley, this is the movie where Ben Wheatley goes from being a guy who you kind of like, oh yeah, he's really doing something interesting, to this is where film schools in Britain start going, okay, well, you need to study Ben Wheatley.
Yeah, I think this is...
And this is the point, this is the next stage in his career. This is the point he becomes a major film.
This is the beginning of the next chapter where he goes from very interesting genre filmmaker to watch to a guy who is capable of handling, you know, gigantic concept films with a decent amount of money behind them, it looked like anyway.
This isn't cheap, just for the size of the ensemble cast.
Even working with big actors. Like we said, Tom Hiddleston is playing your lead, who's pretty big right now, and you have Jeremy Irons, and Elizabeth Moss has a big role in here, which I imagine she largely signed on for, because like, do I get to have sex with Tom Hiddleston? I'm in. Sienna Miller.
Be noted, if you're wary of naked Tom Hiddleston, this is not the film for you.
No. And then Luke Evans.
I think we just sold 30 more tickets just on the basis of that.
Luke Evans, who has always been one of those guys who appears in films that are better than he is.
Yeah.
And yet here, he's kind of a scene steal.
He's one of the best things in it.
Yeah.
Because he's the one that, while everybody else is falling apart, he plays this documentarian who's going, no, I'm going to chronicle the collapse of civilization. And he's great in it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a career-making performance for him. Because he starts looking like a five-year-old. He always looked a little bit too youthful, and now he really, like, he looks like a guy that you wouldn't get on the wrong side.
And he's just filled with this indignant, righteous anger throughout the whole thing that he really pulls off.
Yeah.
Whereas Hiddleston's wonderful disaffectedness as well, just playing that guy.
Yes.
Who's like, I'm sure it's going to be fine. All right, next up is, what was the next one we were going to talk about? Oh, The Witch.
Oh.
Definitely one of the most anticipated films at Fantastic Fest this year, after, I believe it was at Was it at
TIFF?
It was at TIFF that it slayed audiences. Not literally, it's not. Don't worry.
Yeah, this is undoubtedly a horror film, but at Toronto they played it in competition.
Yeah, because it is a film that is, even though no doubt a horror film, it's also a really effective and disturbing drama.
Yes.
With just knock it out of the park performances.
Yeah.
And unbelievably, with all that, with this like gorgeous cinematography, this haunting score, this, although slow paced, perfectly paced for a film that's all about building up a set of dread, sense of dread. First time director.
Yeah.
You're like, really? Because this is the work of a much more mature director.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, first time guy, Robert Eggers, and he seems a little befuddled by the whole thing.
He does seem a bit confused because he went to Ontario into the middle of nowhere and shot this thing with a tiny cast.
Yeah.
In two locations in the middle of nowhere.
With largely unknown actors.
Yeah.
You know.
And the basic story is that this is supposed to be set during the early colonial period, the extremely early colonial period.
Yes.
And a family is basically kicked out of the colony.
Yeah, so they have to make their pilgrim's progress over, see what I did there?
Yeah,
over
so they,
to
and they,
their own new area they, out in the woods.
Just, it's just father and mother and their teenage daughter and their preteen son and their baby and their pair of twins who are the world's most annoying children and wonderfully so.
Yeah, and that's because they're supposed to be.
And they're on the edge of a forest and this is a bad place to be.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of nowhere, you wouldn't want to do this anyway. And then things get strange.
Well, right off the bat almost. Like, you see they have a new infant child, and the older daughter is playing peekaboo with it on the ground, and literally in the space of 2 seconds, while her eyes are closed, the baby's just gone.
Yeah.
Like, just gone. And she's obviously a little freaked out, and the assumption is, well, an animal must have just swooped it up. But the film does actually say, I mean, it's not one of those movies like, ooh, is there a witch or isn't there a witch? It shows you right from the get-go, yeah, there's a witch, and she grinded that shit up.
Yeah.
That baby is not coming back.
And this is based on a huge amount of research of transcripts from various witch trials in the period, mythology of witches around that point. It is dark.
Yeah.
You really feel throughout the entire thing that there's no way that anybody can survive this, because this is a place that even if there is not a witch stealing your children, you're going to die here.
Yeah.
Their corn is failing. They hate each other.
Yeah.
They have no money. They have nothing. They have no community to fall back upon because they've been exiled. So like, these people are doomed, and then you drop this on top of them. This is a bleak movie.
Oh, it's pretty damn bleak, yeah.
But it's, I mean, some people I know had a bit of a problem with when it comes to the witches. It has its cake historically and eats it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is if the Puritans had actually gone, see, no, told you there were witches.
Well,
and that's an issue for some people. It's a decision that the director has made to say, this is, if you believed in witches at the time, this is what your world would have been like. You would have thought like this.
There's a scroll at the beginning that says this is based on folk tales.
Yes.
So we're not trying to put you in a position to say, yes, we believe something like this actually happened. This is based on a folk tale, the perception of the people at the time. And I thought it was interesting, as much as I often find films with the witches or the bad guys to be, almost by their nature, rather misogynist, this so emphasizes the damage of the patriarchal nature of the society at that time,
yeah,
that you're almost like, well, this is a kind of forgivable response in some ways to that. Even assuming that witches have made a pact with the devil and are evil, you're like, yeah, but fuck, man.
The sad thing is that this does the story of witchcraft in early America, in early colonial America, so well that I think it guarantees we will not get Blair Witch 3. They will not, as they've been trying to do for years. No, they keep saying that, like, they want to try and maybe come back to it, but they were going to do the Ellie Kedwood story and kind of fill that out. And I'm like, you don't need to now because you've got the witch.
Yeah,
you know, that does this so perfectly. This is a piece of great horror, a piece of great art. This is, like you said, it is unbelievable. This is the first time director.
Yeah.
This is. I don't know where he goes from here, because this is, I think the expectation after this is going to be so sky high.
And can I talk about how good the child actors are in this thing?
Across the board.
Oh my god. Especially, I mean, the daughter, who's the main character really, is wonderful, but the son in this has this sequence where, like, he was young enough that they couldn't really explain to him what he was supposed to be doing, which is basically, like, you're possessed and having an orgasm.
Yeah.
So instead they said, imagine that you're in a lot of pain. I think he said, imagine you're in a lot of pain, but your favorite soccer team just, like, scored, like, the winning goal. But it's amazing and disturbing to watch.
Oh, and one of the best things about this from a historical point of view is that, and this isn't me just going, yay, because, no, everybody has a British accent.
Yes.
This is early colonial America that has not become America yet. This is where people have gone from Britain, and everybody sounds like they just rolled off the ship.
Because they did.
And that's a beautiful smart choice. Which just that one thing alone gives you an insight into how thoughtful this film is about making a world that feels absolutely 100% accurate to the time.
This definitely emphasizes the grim part of Pilgrim.
Yes.
Well, anyway, thank you so much, Richard, for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's more Fantastic Fest reviews for you. More Fantastic Fest reviews on the way. Please leave us your comments about what else you might want to say. Like, hey, I saw this player. Please talk about it. Because then maybe we will.
Maybe.